The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, I want to say a little bit about... Well, first, if any of you have hard of hearing, if you go to the upper left-hand side of... If you go to the upper left-hand side of the screen, there is, it says on otter.ai live notes. You'll leave the Zoom. You'll stay, probably you just get moved over. Your Zoom window will be open, but just put to the side or wherever mysterious place these screens go. And you can get a running transcription of what's being said here. Also in the chat room I see just now, there's a link to that place is there. So if you have a hard time understanding because your hearing's not so good or something, we're just trying out this new service that this company named Otter provides, and it works pretty well. Though if you want to have fun, you tell it poly words, and it comes out funny in English. If you say poly, it comes out poly, like the name. I wanted to say a little bit about Mahapajapati, and I was so inspired having Patachara on the altar we had her about a little over a week. And it's the first time we ever had anyone but the Buddha on the altar. And I feel remiss that it took so long to have someone else up there, especially having a nun. But the Padachara had just been given to us, and a wonderful statue that had been made for us. And we're happy to have it. And the plan was to have her there for some months during this pandemic. But then because the wood was cracking a little bit, sent it down to its home down in the retreat center where it's a little more humid with cooler. So we thought maybe it'd be better for the wood. But we've had here at IMC a statue of the first Buddhist nun named Mahapajapati. And that we've had it here since maybe 15, 16 years, maybe more. And she's very important because she was the founder of the nun's order. And she was the one who talked the Buddha into ordaining women. And before we had IMC, this building here, we were meeting as a sitting group in Palo Alto. And there was a wonderful woman named Chloe Scott who led an all-women's dance troupe for like 40 years in this area. She was quite a force. And she was part of our sitting group. We were friends. And at that time, I was very much part of Spirit Rock. And Spirit Rock was very concerned about having more feminine images of women in what had been a very male-dominated kind of art scene. You know, the Buddha was male and all these Buddhists, male Buddhists they have. So Spirit Rock was beginning to put up different figures, paintings, tankas, different things of women. Great women, but they were all bodhisattvas. They were all kind of celestial or non-human. And I thought in Theravada, in our tradition, it's very human-centric compared to some Mahayana Buddhists that have a very different kind of celestial-centric kind of Buddha and bodhisattvas. And so I really wanted to have for Spirit Rock a statue or an image of a human woman, and like the Buddha is supposed to be human. And so I thought that the best, and I'd read back then that Mahapajapati in the early centuries of Buddhism in India, that she had a status that was almost as high as the Buddha. She was a very high status, and especially among the nuns. And I thought, well, let's get a statue of her for Spirit Rock. And so Chloe said, sure. Something like that. And she was going to support it, or something like that. But it was kind of like a sure kind of thing or something. And then when we bought this building to become here at IMC in Redwood City, she came back to me one day and she said, now I'm ready to have the statue made for you. And so she found a local artist that is a friend of hers. And then, I don't know if any of you know, there's a nun in England named Ajahn Sundara. And she was around that time here. And so she kind of modeled for the sculptress. And she came back with a statue, and it was kind of a surprise to receive it. And you can kind of see that her hands are up in the teaching mudra, because the artist wanted to have a depiction of a woman who wasn't just simply awakened, but a woman who was actually in the world teaching. And also the statue, if you can't really see it from here, but she's leaning forward slightly. And the artist wanted to show this idea of being in the world in the statue itself. So so we've had it here at IMC in an important place for many years. And I want to tell you, because I don't get a chance to do this more, it's a bit of forgotten history for IMC, that we had this wonderful event where we installed the statue. And if you don't judge me until I finish the story, as I tell you how this installation happened. So Chloe Scott was this dancer and dance troupe. So I asked her to be part of this piece of theater of installing the statue. And I'll describe what happened. So we were here at IMC, and lots of people, more than 100 people came. The room was really packed. But as people came in, we divided the room so that the men could sit in the front near the Buddha, and the women could sit in the back in the back of the hall, representing, unfortunately, part of the misogyny, part of the ways in which women were treated historically in Buddhism, and still in some places you can experience this. And it wasn't part of the plan, but everyone kind of trusted me, apparently. No one complained. Everyone just did it. Maybe it was so foreign to our world to have the separation of the sexes this way that I don't know, they just trusted me and went along. And then just before I was supposed to start, this woman came in late, and there was a chair kind of available in the front where the men were. And, you know, we never separate the sexes that way. So she slipped in and sat down. So it became part of the theater, if I may say that, where I went over nicely, respectfully to her and bowed and pointed her to the back of the room. And so she kind of was. The ancient priestesses of Greece kind of wearing these long kind of gowns or dresses and flowing and just coming in, kind of stepping, almost like stepping two steps forward and one step back, two steps forward, one step back, and stately kind of carrying Mapa Japati. And she was covered over with a sheet. And we came in and they put her down in front of the Buddha. And then a local Zen teacher was reading the story it was based on a story that from the suttas, where Mapa Japati then asks the Buddha to ordain women as nuns. Japati asked a second time. No, the Buddha said, and then lights went out. She asked a third time. And so we turned off the lights again, and we left them off. And then the way the story goes is the Buddha's attendant, a monk named Ananda, made the case that he should ordain women. And then the Buddha agreed. And then instead of turning the lights on, the dancers went up and each of them took a candle and lit it off the candle on the altar. And they took the sheet off Mapa Japati, and then they picked her up, and then they carried her in a stately way out to the other big room we have at IMC, where she was going to be installed. And when they left the room, there's a big accordion door here that separates the two rooms. they closed the accordion door. Oh, so they carried out the statue, and then all the women who were sitting in the back of the hall were invited to follow them out. And when all the women had left, they closed the accordion door. And as a result, the light's never been turned on, the men were left sitting in the dark. Literally. And the women went out to have a women's meeting. And that was part of the way it was set up. And I have no idea what was supposed to happen there when the women met, but they met out there in a circle with Mahapa Japati in the middle of the floor and talked about things that were important to talk about, I guess. And when they were ready, they opened the door and invited the men back. And the men just sat there in the dark, waiting to, you know, to something to happen. And and so then I came up and I went into sat as a teacher. I went and sat in the middle next to Mahapa Japati. There was these circles of women around her, and now the men were on the outside of the circle because the women were already there. And I asked, and I had invited seven Buddhist women, Buddhist teachers, to be part of this, and so they had a lead role. And my Dharma sister Vicky Austin, who's a Zen priest at Zen Center, was there. And I asked the women, now that you've had a chance to have a discussion, is there anything that you feel like you want to tell the men now that they've come here? And Vicky said, don't get us started. And so, okay. And so then we carried the statue and put her up where she was going to be. And without any kind of thought to it, if that just like, this, you know, that's not the right way of saying it, but just the most natural thing for me to do, given how I've been trained in Buddhism, was to then to walk up to the statue on her altar that she had in the other hall and do three full prostrations in front of her. And to my surprise, there were gasps in the women in the hall to see that. They'd never seen a man do something like that. And it was quite powerful, apparently, for some of them. And then we installed her, and that was the this wonderful experience of Mahapa Japati. And then about 4 years ago or so, there's a second story of Mahapa Japati from the ancient texts, and that's a story of her death. And we did this huge pageant. We did this whole play based on this ancient story here on her enlightenment. And this wonderful story is she again is elevated to a status that's probably comparable to the Buddha in the story, and we had this wonderful wonderful Zen teacher named Angie Boisevain play Mahapa Japati. And Angie is quite old, and we had these steps to go up to the stage where they performed it, and she actually needed help to get up the steps. And so she really played the part. Turns out she had been was in college. She was an actress. So she was not only a Zen teacher, venerable old teacher, she was also a wonderful actress. And we had, and I don't know if any of you know Ananda Bodhi. Venerable Ananda Bodhi is a nun here in California. And she played the Buddha. And we had this beautiful play. And anyway, so that was a second time when we referring to Mahapa Japati. So now we have this Patachara. We already have a Mahapa Japati at the retreat center, but that was commissioned for us. Someone made it, a beautiful statue in Burma. And it certainly has a very feminine face. But in Burma, when it was commissioned, I think it was kind of a foreign thing for Burmese sculptors to make a statue of a woman nun from the ancient times. The only model they had was Buddha's. So they made her flat-chested. And so many people see it, can't really tell the difference between, you have to be like an art historian to know that's not a Buddha, that's something else. That's probably, it looks pretty feminine, must be a woman. So I think most people who see the Mahapa Japati at IRC, our retreat center, think it's just a Buddha sitting there. But now we have this Patachara that's so powerful and wonderful to have. And one of the tasks over the next months is to figure out a place, a dignified, appropriate place to have her there at IRC. But because we had her Patachara on the altar here, it kind of, I'm a little bit embarrassed to say how long it took me to realize that we don't have to always have to have a Buddha on the altar. The Buddha goes on rains retreat regularly back in the ancient times. And of course we should have a woman teacher on the altar when he's away sometimes. And so I'm thinking now sometimes at IRC, we can have Patachara on the main altar too. And grant the Buddha a little bit of chance to take a break and go get refreshed and go on his rains retreat. So anyway, I wanted to share that story with you, and now we have Mapa Japati. She's kind of smaller, so you can't quite see her so well. And I don't know if you can, I don't know if this helps at all, but let me see her a little bit, maybe. It's kind of, the lighting is maybe not so good. So I thought we would do a breakout group so you can meet each other a little bit and talk and maybe introduce each other. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about the paramis or what it's like to do these early morning sittings. Maybe you want to talk a little bit about Patachara and Mapa Japati and what we do here. And that we'll do about, I think about maybe 12 minutes of this breakout groups. And then we'll come back. And then if you want to ask questions of me, and I'll try to respond. And we'll probably go until about 8:30 in California time. So so if the host can make the breakout groups, that would be great. And I see some people are probably leaving, which makes sense also. So leave quickly if you're leaving. Otherwise, you'll end up in a breakout group. So the wonderful Zoom waiting for the electrons to do their magic. And so, stop doing it. But the art of mindfulness practice, so kind of the delight and kind of the specialness of mindfulness practice, is you don't have to stop controlling the breath when you're doing mindfulness. Mindfulness can operate just as well being mindful of a controlled breath as you can an uncontrolled breath. So I would encourage you just to kind of be very content. Don't be bothered by it.
Okay.
And just be accepting of the fact that for now, for however long, your task is to develop mindfulness with a controlled breath. And it might be a little bit more uncomfortable, but that means your task is to learn to be mindful with discomfort, which has its value.
Yeah.
And if you do that for a while, at some point, you'll start relaxing around this, and you probably start discovering some of the deeper reasons why you're controlling it. Reasons meaning there might be some kind of anxiety underneath it, and you'll learn to be mindful of the anxiety, and with time, it'll resolve itself.
Okay. Thank you.
Great, thank you. So then, Roman. So we're waiting for Roman to be unmuted. I wonder if I can, there we go.
Okay, there we go. Good morning, and that was just a wonderful guided meditation, and we had a discussion about using guided meditations in our breakout. But I wanted to ask you, going back to some of your previous teachings, to sort of get an idea of how insights arise. And that goes to your discussion of how you understood how fear impacted your life and how you discovered that your fear, I believe you stated, and I hope I'm not misstating this, was based upon your desire to really be liked by everyone. And I'm just sort of curious, is that something that you discerned from your silent meditation practice, or was that from did you discover that through both meditation, talking to teachers. Sort of what was the process of coming to that realization?
Right. Certainly, I had a lot of fear, but that was one of the fears I had, was the fear of not being liked. And so I think for me, it was at a time I was doing a lot of meditation and doing a lot of mindfulness in my activities, the work that I was doing in the monastery. And so the contrast of, for me, the meditation was pretty relaxing for me. And it wasn't so much I was confronting it there, but to say it simplistically, the relaxed state highlighted for me when I left meditation when the fear would arise. And whereas before it had been kind of a normal state and I hadn't really realized it was there, I was habituated to it. By being calm and relaxed, I started to see it in highlight. And I started to be in situations, I was put in situations in the monastery where I had to work with people a lot. And so the combination of the calm meditation, highlighting it in situations where it came up much more often than usual, was what really brought it to the surface for me and helped me to see that this was hopeless to get. It was kind of a hopeless situation to get everyone in the monastery to like me. And that allowed me to slowly begin to release the grip of it and to relax.
That's real helpful, just to see how meditation and daily life both work together for progress. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Marlena, hi.
Hi. I wanted to say, since you're talking about the early Buddhist women, that Pam Weiss, who is both a Zen and a Vipassana teacher, recently put out a book called A Bigger Sky, Awakening to a Fierce Feminist Buddhism, in which she weaves memoir with stories of the early Buddhist women. And it's quite an amazing book, an easy read with really, really brings just a real clarity. And I also do a radio show. And last Sunday on the 9th, I interviewed her on KPFA. So you can get to the archives there of KPFA.org. She is such a clear speaker, and she's just a delight. And so there's an interview there. You can either just go by time, or you can go to Talk It Out under programs to Talk It Out Radio. And so stuff about the early Buddhist women and their bringing, you know, protesting to get the right to be part of the Sangha. Great. Anyway.
Very nice. Thank you. And coincidentally, Pam Weiss is right now is teaching a retreat for us at the Insight Retreat Center online. But so she's kind of, you know, thank you. So Heidi.
Good morning. Gil, I wish that you would talk a little bit about the mudra of the statue. I've always found that very mysterious.
This one here?
Yes, please.
Oh, I it's called a teaching mudra. And I think how it's, this is my understanding, is that, you know, the Buddha has all these lists, like the 10 paramis. So Mahapajapati is kind of going through the list with her fingers, or there's a kind of way that, I don't know what the artist had in mind, but this mudra, also the thumb and the first finger come together. It's a kind of a very tender, very precise kind of movement to emphasize something very intimate and precise and close as we're teaching. That's my best guess.
She does look rather like she's counting something out on her fingers. So maybe that is it.
Yes.
Thank you.
And is it David?
Yes. Hi, Gil. Question about statues. And I brought this up during our breakout meeting. I'm kind of interested in this question because I was raised a Catholic where there's statues everywhere, the Mary, Joseph, Jesus, the saints. But then I've traveled some and been to mosques around the world in Muslim countries where statues are forbidden because they're considered to be blasphemous and disrespectful toward God and so forth. I also come from a different Buddhist tradition, Nichiren, which at least the school I belong to did not allow statues either. So I have had an interesting variety of traditions that some encourage statues, some do not. And I'm curious about the the frequency of statues of the Buddha, or in your case now these nuns, and how that fits into the spirituality of Buddhist practice. It almost sometimes to me it almost feels like idol worship, especially the statues of the Buddha. And I know there are parts, some countries in Asia where they actually bow down to and seem to pray to the statue of the Buddha as though it is God. And that's interesting to me because, of course, the Muslims would be horrified by that. So I just, you know, and I also brought up in our breakout meeting about this, the statues now around the United States, some being torn down and some being defaced, and the meaning of statues and what that does to people. So I'm just curious your thoughts on statues in general.
Yeah, I'm happy to talk about that. Then first I want to say that there are many different kinds of Buddhism. So, you know, so if you go to, for example, to a Quaker's, you don't get any statues or images there, I don't think. At least the Quaker Center where we used to meet had no images. And but if you go to a Catholic church here in Peninsula, you get lots of statues and paintings and all kinds of things. And I guess they're all considered kind of in the wide scope of Christianity. So the same thing with Buddhism. There's a wide scope of Buddhism, and within it, there are many different kinds of Buddhism with very different answers to your question and the relationship to what this is. And just a coincidence, if you look at my video, if I turn off my video, you'll see a picture of, it's the wrong one. Oh, well. So the Theravada tradition the Theravada tradition is very human centric for the most part, and the earlier you go in that Theravada tradition back to the suttas, it's very human centric, and has very little emphasis, no emphasis really, on worshiping anything that's beyond human. And the Buddha wasn't worshipped in the way that we think of idol worship is. For us here, the statues are a number of different functions. The Buddha statue, all these statues, they're meant to be mirrors of ourselves. So when we bow to the Buddha, the idea is we're bowing to ourselves, to the qualities in ourselves that the Buddha represents. And the Buddha statue itself is a kind of a cartoon that is symbolic of all these teachings of Buddhism. You find something in the stance and the smile and the chest, and all the ways in which it's been constructed by the artist captures some of the qualities that Buddhism is emphasizing as a teaching, almost, that these are qualities that are important. These are qualities that we can inhabit and we can develop as well. The Buddha also represents a place where our gratitude, appreciation, inspiration can be directed, because I found that the more I practiced, the more gratitude I felt and appreciation I had that didn't exactly have an object, but it was really good to have a way of expressing it. So I often, at the end of a sitting, even if I'm sitting alone, there's nothing around me, I'll put my hands together and bow, because I find that giving expression to the gratitude and appreciation I feel is actually very important for the heart's growth and opening of it. And so having an object that represents our faith, represents what we're discovering, this represents what we feel is really important in ourselves, allows that important thing in our heart to kind of grow and develop. So it's not so much that we're worshiping these statues as if they have some power or some role external to us, but it's really how they represent something that can live in ourselves. And so that if we're worshiping anything, we're worshiping our own potential.
Okay, good. Thank you. I like that.
Great. Susan.
Hi, thank you. It's been so wonderful, Gil, to have this structure in my day for these months. So thank you. Uh-huh. I want to put a plug in for maybe some continued to address the gendered issues as a continued part of what we do. Mm-hmm. I feel like it really hit home for myself and other women in this topic of feeling like a second class citizen is really heightened right now with the political situation. And so I'd like to not see this lost because it felt really valuable. And thank you very much. Yeah.
Do you have any ideas, any suggestions how to do that or what you'd like?
Gosh. Well, you know, we have a Waking Up to White Privilege group at ISC. And were there a movement like that, a gendered movement from men?
Nice.
That was certainly be really inspiring and uplifting and encouraging.
Nice.
See that in action. And on the spot, I probably don't have answers, but I'm sure there are a lot of things we can continue doing together to heal the gender issues, including those that don't, those who are not binary.
Yes. So. Yes. Now, we have at our retreat center, we have a wonderful statue of Kuan Yin in a prominent place in the main entry hall where we sit for opening meetings. And that's become, Kuan Yin is considered to be, by many people, to be non-binary. Kuan Yin is not quite male, not quite female, and exactly the gender is not so clear. But, non-binary folks find that Kuan Yin is, really speaks to them and inspires them. So we have it there. So these are all important issues. Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you.
And then Jean.
Yeah, hi. So, Gil, I'm just wondering, since your center is closed down, and I assume you're a Norwegian citizen, is that correct?
I think I am still. I became an American citizen a few years ago, and I didn't renounce my Norwegian. And,
okay.
And Norway kind of has dual citizenship now, so I haven't really looked into it, but I still have my passport. Okay.
So I don't know if it could ever come to pass that you might be interested in coming to Europe to lead retreats up in our meditation center here in Beatenburg, Switzerland. Ah. We've had some illustrious American teachers who have done retreats, including Jack Kornfield.
Nice.
Yeah, right here in my little village. Of course, I knew nothing about this. I only became interested in Buddhism through your course starting at the end of March. So I'm pretty much of a new...
I've met Fred a few times at big teacher meetings, and I love Fred. So, I'd be happy.
Okay.
I'd be happy to come sometime if I'm going to spend time in Europe.
Be great.
But in theory, yes. I don't travel so much anymore, but it's probably
a little easier here than in Thailand or Burma.
Yeah, I know. At some point, I should probably go back to Norway and spend some time in Europe again, and maybe I can do an
or Paris. You know, Paris would be good. So, I mean, maybe it's something you could do during this period when in America everything's shut down, because here it's not shut down as much. You know, use your skills, in person.
Yes.
So just a thought. It seems to me there are a lot of people besides myself over here in Europe who are following your course at the more civilized hour of 4 p.m. over here every day. And I'm sure that they would also love to come and do a retreat led by Gil. Okay. So, but be sure to announce it if you're going to do it, because otherwise I might not find out about it. Great. Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. And then Marie. Maybe we do a couple of more here.
Hi, Gil. My question is about how do I think about using the five faculties as opposed to how do I think about using the ten paramis? Seems to me like they're kind of similar in that you develop them. But could you explain?
Yeah. Simplistic answer is I associate the five faculties more as a reference point for meditation practice, And then Tenparami is more of a refuge, reference for living daily life. So that way meditation is a little bit simpler. It's a little more focused on really the five faculties are easier to focus on supporting the core things of mindfulness and concentration, whereas the five faculties are a little bit more, the Tenparamis are, you know, a little bit too complicated to be focusing, you know, unless you do one at a time for a period of time. To all 10 paramis a bit much to be thinking about in meditation. But for daily life, picking up the one that's relevant for a particular circumstance is a great thing.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Maria. And then maybe the last one. I apologize, those of you who are, you know, have your hand up. That, but it kind of, again, I need to stop soon, and probably we've gone beyond the time we had said. But so, Mary, please.
Okay, Gil. I was wondering, did Mahapajati, I've never heard that she became enlightened. So I'd like to know that. And then I remember that great play. I was lucky enough to be in it. It was a wonderful night. Was it recorded anywhere where we could watch it again?
Yes, it was recorded. And I was given a thumb drive with the recording. And I never knew quite what to do with it. So it's supposed to be at home still, that recording. And hopefully I can find it. And I have wondered periodically, but how can we post it somewhere or do something with it?
Would that be a YouTube thing too, or what, or someplace on our website?
Yes, a YouTube phenomenon, and you might get stardom from that.
No, I don't think so. But it was a great evening, and you know what? When I first came to these teachings, I was furious at the story of the Buddha leaving his wife and family, and it took me a lot to get beyond that. And then looking around, seeing all these monks, and where are the women in this? It was so male-oriented. So, you know, thanks to IMC and your teachings and everything, I really have overcome that obstacle. You know, I don't feel that way anymore. And thank you so much, so much.
Thank you, Mary. Well, I'll look for the video and talk to people, see if we can get it posted somewhere. It was a great play.
It was the artwork, everything in it was just so, to me, it was a grand whole night meditation. And then meeting the nuns from Alokavihara or wherever they came from was wonderful. The whole thing was so beautiful, beautiful.
And then we had, and this time when we did, after this play, it was the women who stayed in the meditation hall and the men left. And the men closed the door on the women, and the women had a whole meeting to discuss whatever they were going to discuss after that play. And the men went to the kitchen and prepared for the snacks and the refreshments.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And it was so great because instead of the little women making sure that everybody got snacks, the men were there to greet us with. It was like, what? Oh my gosh, this is so different. So thank you so much.
Great. So thank you. And so, my friends, this has been pretty precious for me also to be part of this YouTube phenomena and all of you and being connected to this wide community and to receive this invitation to come to Europe just kind of speaks to this wide connection that's gotten, become so rich for all of us and all over the world. And so I express my gratitude to all of you and look forward to continuing this, and I'll be back in a week, you know, when after my little trip up in the Sierras. And maybe I'll find a little river and a boulder to sit on and see how that goes. So thank you, and be well, and you'll be in good hands with Nikki next week. Bye-bye. You can unmute yourself if you want. Maybe the host can unmute everyone if you want. Everyone wants to say goodbye. Nice to express that.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Stay healthy. Enjoy your weekend.
Get rest.
Thank you, everybody.
Enjoy your time.
Enjoy your enjoy the mountain.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Blessings. Yeah.